folks, or?
Just shopping around.
Okay, so you're still shopping around, and some of them may beat this. Or are you shopping around, but this is still going to be your best, you think?
It's one of
them. So you're waiting more than any reason, because there may actually be some that are even better than this.
Should I go back to them before I make up my mind, or should I go back to them after I find out that they are the best option?
Okay, so one of the things that this gets to is this notion of staying at the table. I think you want to stay at the table. If you are at all concerned about them having made a verbal offer, but then, you know, over time that just sort of dissipates, they sort of lose their commitment to it, they're already fully looking for other people, you may miss the boat. If there's any risk of any of that, you want to make sure you stay at the table and at least stay engaged. You don't necessarily have to rush if written offer, but if every week or every couple of weeks or every month you're talking with your boss from the summer and saying, hey, listen, I just wanted to update you on how things are going, just wanted to see how things are going over there. Can you help me understand what the process tends to be for you folks when you have a summer intern? Learn what their process tends to be. When do they need to make hiring decisions? Don't push them on an offer if you're not in any rush to get one, but just make sure there's no chance that you get tossed from the list simply because you didn't seem interested. So if there's any risk of that, stay at the table, learn more about their process, make sure they know you're still interested, but don't push them for something in writing unless they say, well, you know what? Actually, I'm kind of glad you called. We had kind of started to think that maybe you're not that interested. We're actually in the process of giving offers now. Oh, well, glad I called. What's the process typically? You make offers and then what? Oh, would you be flexible in that? Oh, okay. What do you need from me? Et cetera, et cetera. So stay engaged.
Yes, sir. One here and then we'll take one over there.
I graduated in 94. I didn't expect your talk here today.
Sorry, say again?
I graduated in 94.
You graduated in 94?
Yes, I didn't expect your conference here today. So I just wanted to hear and listen. I've been in the workforce 20 years. I think your point number...
Which one?
Number... Don't rush your offers.
Uh-huh.
That's the best point.
That's the best one?
Yes. All right. Session.
Should I put that number one next time, or just put it in bold, maybe? Or?
I'm not trying to challenge you.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, good. More questions like that would be welcome. Yes, ma'am.
Let's make some thoughts on when, sort of when to know to walk away, or when to know, like, when do you actually know that, like, it's over, and when should you sort of step back and know to stop versus.
Sorry, when is what over? That you're not getting the job, or they're not improving the offer?
The offer sort of.
Well, there's some sure signs. If they're really annoyed at you, stop. But, you know, here's the general rule, and then how you apply it tactically differs. So my view is this. You never want a negotiation to end with a no. You want it to end in one of two ways, either a yes or an explanation as to why not. So when somebody says no to me, that's okay. Sometimes they can't do anything. I get that. This may be out of bounds. It may not be possible. Too many constraints. No, they don't. What I want to do is, if I get a no, I want to at least understand why not. Once I have an explanation for why they think they can't do it, then I can make up my mind as to, okay, this is probably not worth beating my head over. All right. So if I have no idea why not, then maybe the conversation should continue. But once they've explained to me why not, and there doesn't seem to be much that I can do about it, that's great. So that's one answer. Make sure you're not just getting no five times. Make sure you're getting no once and then four explanations, if anything. All right? And the second piece of it is often they'll be signaling to you, we really can't do anything. And you'll push back a little bit more and they'll say something like, you know, I thought we kind of made it clear that that's not possible. Okay, well, take that as a hint. You know, if they're having to repeat themselves, and it's not because you're asking the same question over and over again, then that's maybe another signal. But again, keep going until you get what you want, which may not be the case, but at least you understand why they're not giving it to you. And then it's perfectly fine to say, okay, it's not worth doing. All right? Sir?
What are the best ways of using an offer to negotiate, another offer to negotiate? Do you kind of just, I mean, can you say that, like, oh, that my other offer is paying me X, you should also pay X, or what are the best ways to do it?
So it depends. So if the other offer is paying you a lot less, that's probably not the right thing to do. In a world where your other offer is pretty good or more, and the other offer, and again, you may not have any other offers, but the other things that you can bring to the table, What you used to make before you started your MBA is a perfectly fine thing to bring up. What the average MBA student makes is a perfectly fine thing to bring up. What the average person in this job or industry makes is a perfectly fine thing to bring up. These are all types of justifications for what you want to ask for. So, yes, one good one is my other offer is offering X. Whether you have that or not, what you're probably going to do is say, how can I make a compelling case that I deserve more? And you just happen to have picked one of the four or five or six ways in which you can do it. And you bring it up, depending on whether it's worth bringing up, whether it helps make the case, and what's relevant to the people on the other side. Some people are glad you brought that up because when they go back to their committee and they have to say, hey, we got to give this guy more because, you know, he's got offers from X, Y, and Z, and at least two of them are significantly higher than what we're paying, and we could stretch and make it. Great. Other people don't even care to know about that. They're in a different industry. They say, I know you're making a lot more there. Now, you may still bring it up because you want to push them up a little bit. There's no doubt about that. But it won't necessarily play the same role. So what you want to think about is, what are all the justifications I can make to justify the offer I want to ask for? So they're offering me this. I want this. What's the story I need to tell them? Sometimes a part of that is, yes, I have other offers, and they're here. But just remember, if your other offer is here, you may lose them on, are we ever going to get this guy? So if you're going to bring up that offer, it better be followed by, and of course I know you can't match at that level, but I did want to suggest to you, you know, I am willing to give up a fair amount of money to work with the kind of company that you are and the kind of opportunity you give to folks at this stage in the career. But to the extent that you can bridge that gap a bit, it would be pretty useful for me. All right, so yes, by all means use it. Don't throw it in their face too hard. Give it to them as information.
Is there any specific guidance you would offer to a student that might be sponsored, like going to the negotiating table on what they're going to do next, if the company has significant financial leverage over for them and their opportunity?
So what's the question?
Does any of this change if you don't really have the ability to walk away as easily? Someone who might, you know, have two or three job offers, the ability to go from one to the other?
Yeah, you know,
where you come off on the trade-offs changes depending on your situation. You've given one version of what makes it hard to walk away. All right, some people don't walk away because they're too risk averse. Some people can't walk away because they have young kids. 5 years from now, it may be a different reason. So yes, the principles I think are all still relevant. They don't change, but the trade-offs you make may change. If what they've offered you is this offer plus implicitly $150,000 or $100,000 on tuition, well, that's part of the offer they're giving you, all right? And so it's going to be a judgment call. Now, what I think is, if you don't fall into the category of folks who, you know, if you take on that debt, you're going to be, you know, on the street or you have young kids to feed or anything else, then number 15 is still the most relevant piece of advice, which is, you know, do I want to be stuck here for the rest of my life, or am I willing to take that hit and do the one thing I really, really wanted to do? So if anything, I would say you end up having to pay more attention. That becomes more salient, that you're going to have to give up more than your friends will. On the other hand, if they've already paid the tuition, then you're really no different. The last thing I'll say is the framing matters. When they've paid for it and you're thinking of it as an additional $100,000 hit or more, it just seems much worse and dumber to say no to that money than if you'd paid your own way through loans. And yet it's really the same thing at the end of the day. So, yeah, you're making, you have a job offer, forget you're sponsored, you have a job offer, and they threw on, you know, your loan forgiveness or something. Well, how much do you value that? It's just one of the five or six or seven things you value. Just like you value which city you're going to be in, just like you value your salary and your bonus and the job and the boss and the industry, it's just one more thing you value. Don't overvalue it, because sometimes people put that in just a totally different category. Oh, but sponsorship. Oh, but I'm sorry, I got my hands tied. I'm not like everybody else. No, you're just like everybody else. You just happen to have identified yet one more interest that you have. And now weight it appropriately rather than everything else, and then 50% of the variance goes to this. No, it's probably a lot less than that. All right? Yes, sir.
What would be advice on discerning between constraints on for the other party?
Some of the constraints that they're putting might be real, but some of them might be just posturing and artificial. So what would be advice for us to how to discern between those?
Lots of judgment here, but I'll give you just one piece of advice on this. So I find that the way in which you ask a question has a huge impact on what they share with you, even controlling for how much they intend to share with you. So they either want to share a lot or not. We can't necessarily change that in a moment. But how we ask can make a difference. So when somebody says, no, we just can't do that. Questions that sound like one of the following. I'll give you two examples, I guess. I often ask people, imagine a situation where you could do that. Imagine a world in which that was possible. Describe that world to me. What would have to be different about that world in which you'd be able to do it? And then people have to paint that picture for you. And it gives you a little bit of a better idea about what is causing that constraint. All right. Another possibility, a little bit along the lines of what we've already discussed, is can you give me an example of situations where you've done that? Now, it's easy to make you say, I just can't do that. When people say, I just can't do that, in their mind, they're interpreting as, I'm telling this person, this would be very hard for me to do. I'm not really lying to this person. I just said, I just can't do that. But when you ask them, have you ever done that before in any conditions? And they have. They're a little bit more likely to then have to, quote unquote, fess up. And say, well, there have been extreme cases where we've ended up doing that. Can you tell me when that happened? I know I may not fall into one of those categories, but it's just kind of useful to know how the process works. And then sometimes they're a little bit more open to it, right? Now, there's other things you can do. You can talk to other folks. You can triangulate. You can say, well, the HR person told me this. What do you think? You have to be careful that you don't look like you're going over someone's head. But you can still try to get information from different angles and see if that helps as well.
Do you have, different type of advice for negotiating in, really small company where it's, 5 to 10 people, no HR at all, and if you have a really close relationship with the person that you're
Well, in some ways, everything we're saying becomes even more important, right? So it probably means that the range of outcomes is much higher. You could end up getting a lot less or a lot more because there's very little precedent. They're not concerned about the other people they're hiring that year, potentially. You have a relationship, so there's already some goodwill there. So I would say, being more honest becomes more important. Learning more about what they can and can't do becomes more important. Making sure they like you becomes more important. And the range of things you can get from them is a lot more. Now, keep in mind, I'm saying the range is bigger. I'm not saying the upper end of that range is higher than what you can get with a traditional offer. But if in a traditional offer, the range is this, in a non-traditional setting, the range may be this. All right? And so you want to play your cards right even more so. And by playing your cards, I mean learning as much as you can about where they're coming from. And there's one more thing. It's not here. Influence and persuasion does matter. A person who's never hired a Harvard Business School MBA or any MBA is maybe even more open to learning from you what it is that you can bring to the table. Maybe they're undervaluing you not because they don't have as much money. They're undervaluing you because they don't know what you can do well. All right. So if you can make the case, if you can advise or inform them about how much other people make in companies like this or with the kind of experience you have, they may be more persuadable. So maybe that range goes from here to even here. So that may be possible as well. So it becomes more of a two-way conversation, not just understanding and structuring, but educating them as well about what's possible. The last thing you want is to be underemployed by the same company that could have given you full employment. All right? If they're going to put you in a role, in a position, because they think that's their need, but you can do even more for them, have that conversation. That's the best conversation you can have. What if we were to increase the scope of what I can accomplish? Maybe not today, but over the next 3 years. Could we structure a deal that if we do this, this, and this, I'm in this position? So all of this, I think, just becomes more important because where you can end up is so varied.
Right? Yes, ma'am.
So you mentioned the currencies, the flexibility of currencies. What are some creative and often overlooked types of currencies that MBAs don't bring to the table
Everything except salary.
I think people are overly focused on salary more than they're under-focused on any one thing. I think that's definitely a piece of it. But what's the standard stuff? I'll add one thing, which I briefly touched on before. So certainly you can just list all the things you care about, which city you're going to be on, what kind of project you're going to be on, what kind of responsibilities you're going to have, what your start date is, you know, if you want to take the summer off or whatever else you want to do. People may be able to give you some money for your MBA, you know, the loan stuff. But it's putting yourself in position for the next negotiation, which is often a good thing to do and maybe the last thing that you could ask for.